Right, folks, good afternoon and welcome to yet another edition of the Citizen Talk. This is where we invite different people to come and unpack some of the most difficult issues that we are faced with as a country. Now, a lot has been said about where South Africa is headed, considering the different challenges that we have. Now, Gift of the Givers is a humanitarian organization, which is no stranger to anyone, you know, in the country. You know, whether you talk about disasters, you know, when they strike, they are actually most of the time among the first few people to get to, you know, the scene. And we thought, you know, why not invite the founder of this, you know, organization that does so much good work, Mr. Imtiaz Suleiman, to come and talk to us, you know, about the different projects that they've, you know, embarked on over the years. But before we even get into that, let me just firstly welcome Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman to our studios. Doc, good afternoon to you, and thank you so much for coming through.
Good afternoon, Stephen, and greetings to your listeners too.
Thank you so much once again for honoring our invitation. Doc, before we go anywhere, before we start talking about the different projects that you've been involved in over the years, give us a brief background about the Gift of the Givers. How was it founded? You know, what prompted you to start this organization?
Gift of the Givers is not my organization. I didn't get up one morning and say, okay, I think today I'll form an organization, give it a name, find some founder members, write a constitution, and write down 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. This is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. No, it never happened like that.
Yeah.
Gift of the Givers is totally spiritual. I met a spiritual teacher in Istanbul in August 91.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a place where people from all religions, all countries, all nationalities were there in a Muslim holy place. And I saw the understanding and the respect and the love between different people.
Yeah.
And I fell in love with what I saw, and I fell in love with the teacher. I came back to South Africa, and my heart yearned to go back to Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
August 92, I went back. It was the 6th of August, a Thursday night at 10 p.m., 1992. The spiritual teacher, after a prayer session, suddenly picks his head up, makes eye contact with me, and looks heavenwards at the same time. And in fluent Turkish, and I don't speak a word of Turkish,
wow,
but I understood every single word that he said.
Mm.
He said, "My son, I'm not asking you, I'm instructing you to form an organization. The name in Arabic will be Waqful Waqifin. Translated, Gift of the Givers.
Wow.
You will serve all people of all races, all religions, all colors, all classes, all cultures, of any geographical location and of any political affiliation. But you will serve them unconditionally. You will expect nothing in return, not even a thank you. This is an instruction for you for the rest of your life."
Wow.
"Serve people with love, kindness, compassion, and mercy. And remember, the dignity of man is foremost. Clothe the naked, feed the hungry, provide water to the thirsty, and in everything that you do, be the best at what you do, because you're dealing with human life, human suffering, human emotion, and human dignity." He went on to say, "Remember, my son, that whatever you do is done through you and not by you." I asked him, "How is it when you speak Turkish, I understand, and other people speak Turkish, I don't understand?"
Yeah.
So he said, "My son, when the hearts connect and the souls connect, the words become understandable." I asked him, "I'm a doctor in private practice.
Yeah.
I have 3 surgeries in a place called Pietermaritzburg in South Africa. What exactly do you want me to do?" He told me one line: "You will know." For 30 years, I do know.
Wow.
What to do, how to do, what not to do, what to touch, what not to touch.
Wow. And I mean, over the years, and we bring it now back home, over the years, you've encountered different people, you know, you've been to different provinces, if not all of them, and you've seen, you've watched how people suffer down there. And what stands out for you is are there any particular incidents that you can think of and say, you know what, yeah, people are really having it tough out there?
Well, I've done local and international projects.
Yeah.
We've supported 45 countries, South Africa included. But what you find the most in the people suffering, what is absolutely striking, is the patience of the people.
Sure.
When you get to them, they're in hardship, they're in difficulty, but somehow the faith is very strong. And they say, "We know we're put in this difficult situation. We know, you know what, God knows about this. We accept our position. We accept why we're in this state. And we know that you are here or your teams are here because God Almighty himself has sent you.
Mm.
And they have that kind of faith and the gratitude. It doesn't matter. And they even tell us that if you came with nothing, just the fact that you came with your team and we know that people care for us, that's good enough. There's emotional and psychological healing just to see people from far. And when you give them something, you see the joy in a child's face. And the most striking thing is the joy in the eyes. When you see the eyes of the people, you can see that thankfulness in the eye that, you know, something has been done for me. There's an element of hope.
Mm.
The suffering is all types. You know, people dying from hunger, malnutrition, famine, wars, earthquakes, floods, hurricanes. People have medical issues, medical complications, all different types of challenges. You know, and with COVID, we've seen in the country itself how many people passed on, how many people had a problem getting oxygen machines,
yeah,
and getting oxygen issues. You've seen the hunger with the lockdown, people needing food parcels, soup kitchens, kids scavenging through the dump sites, eating, putting a jam tin at their mouth, putting a peanut butter bottle, taking a finger inside, trying to eat, kids eating plants to survive. But again, the patience. You go to schools, you see numbers of kids in the schools, not enough toilets, not enough classrooms, teachers not always there. You see the overpacked hospitals, not enough medical personnel, not enough equipment. Equipment is not functional.
Mm.
Waiting 5 to 6 years to get procedures done. I'm talking specifically about South Africa.
Yeah.
There's challenges all over. Then you see, of course, the other level where middle-class people have lost their jobs. Only one family member is working. There's hunger in the house. They don't put their hand out. They feel too embarrassed. The kids are taken out of school, either homeschooling or put into a public school from a Model C school. Or sometimes just not sent to school because they just feel too embarrassed that something has happened to them. People can't pay their cars. They can't pay their homes. They lose their homes. You know, they have to move somewhere else. Mm-hmm. All these are the kind of challenges that you see. But over and above all this, you see the resilience of the people. They've tried to stand up strong. They find hardship and difficulty. And this is what we as a country need to respond to make it easier for those people in those type of difficult situations.
Mm-hmm. And Doc, when you look at our country, for instance, I mean, we've got so many, you know, challenges out there that, you know, millions of people, you know, are faced with. And when you look at government as well, government has always been in the news for all the wrong reasons. I mean, and I'm glad you mentioned the word, you know, serving the people. Where do you think we got it wrong?
Ego, greed, avarice, and we forgot our roots.
Mm.
You know, I mean, you talk about the political party that brought transformation. The first years were glorious. I mean, this was the people of Oliver Tambo, you know, and you've seen what a man he was, Walter Sisulu, what they were, and Nelson Mandela himself. And they kept to those original principles. When we lost those principles, when we moved into materialism, when we left spirituality, when we left our commitment that when you come to government, it's not a job, it's a service. When you come to government, you come for one reason only, to serve the people.
Sure.
But it moved from serving people to serving self, to serving self, serving families, serving neighbor, serving relatives. And, you know, it's about acquiring the spoils because you spent so many years in exile, whatever you did. What about the people who went through oppression for all those years? You know, what about them? They put you in a position of power for one purpose only, to help improve the situation. You failed them.
Mm.
There's no other way of explaining it. You have failed them, and you have a chance to redeem yourself, come back to the original principles, come back to serving the people, don't come back to serve yourself. And if you put that right and stop your infighting, we can make a difference to serve the people of our country.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, in recent years, there was one particular hospital here in Joburg, you know, which had water issues. And, you know, what really struck me was then Gift of the Givers was the first, people to come on board and, you know, to make sure that, boreholes drilled, just to make sure that, you know, the water situation there is improved. Talk to us about that experience.
Look, we have team members in most of the hospitals in the country.
Yeah.
And we got called to say, you know what, there's some problem in the water. I think there was some problem with the municipality.
Mm.
The water was shut down on the south side of Johannesburg. So they said, can we get some bottled water and just something to tide us by, to wash the patients, to give medicines, to wash the babies, to have water for them and to do some procedures.
Yeah.
So we said, that's fine. We gave them on a Friday, and on Monday they called again. So I said, is your problem not solved yet? They said, no, they don't think it's going to get solved. It seems to be a far bigger problem than what they thought it was. So I said, this is not sustainable. On Tuesday morning, I sent in a drilling team. I said, rather let's have your own water, because if this thing is going to keep coming and going, we don't know when this is going to stop. And it affects catch-up surgery. And remember, we had lost over 2 years with COVID.
Yeah.
So we couldn't lose any more time with catch-up medical care. But with no water, you can't do anything. So we drilled a borehole. We disconnected many parts of the hospital a few months ago. And in the last month or two, again, the water crisis is bad. The water from the one borehole is not enough, because with load shedding, now the reservoirs don't fill up. So we had to put in booster pumps. We drilled a second borehole. Now we gave them two boreholes to have enough water. But still, the load shedding is a problem. And, and diesel is very expensive for generators.
Yeah.
So we sent in a specialized team, engineering team, to look at taking the hospital off the grid completely and look at putting solar power or solar energy into the hospital system. We've got approval from the hospital itself. The engineers have drawn up a plan already. We are looking to get the funding and to take Rahima Musa off the grid, the electricity grid. And hopefully then they can carry on their procedures. They can do theater. They can do ICU. They won't lose any children, and things can carry on in that hospital and provide an efficient service. Whilst doing Rahima Musa, Helen Joseph came to us. We got a similar problem. We don't have water. We can't do catch-up operations. We're sending people back home. We called them after so many months. They came and they were waiting, and we had to send them home. So we drilled a borehole there. Same thing. A few months later, they also don't have enough water. It's still an issue. And we drilled a second borehole there also. That one cost us a bit more, because we had to go much deeper. And we had to go to areas where the borehole was very far from the water reticulation system. So we had to put pipelines for hundreds of meters. But the water source was on that side. It wasn't anywhere else. So we drilled a second borehole. And also we put infiltration systems. And these things require maintenance every month. So it's a very expensive business, but it has brought a huge relief to both those hospitals.
Wow. Folks, if you're listening, we are having a conversation with one of the founders of Gift of the Givers, Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman. We're here to talk about, this organization that's been doing so much good over the years. If I'm not mistaken, Gift of the Givers turned 30 years old in August, my birth month. How does that make you feel? I mean, you've been around for such a long time and you're still keeping on and keeping on.
Well, the good thing is it shows that the public acknowledges what we do, because the support won't come if people are not happy with what we do. We can only survive and succeed and make progress and help if people fund you. And the funding over the years is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, which means people are happy with what we're doing. Secondly, to me, from a personal point of view, I've kept up my word to the spiritual teacher that we'll serve people unconditionally. And we've done that for 30 years in 45 countries. And with each year, the number of people benefiting has just increased. Thirdly, of course, it's a congratulations to my team, the full-time team that have done all this work and won the hearts and minds of so many people in the country and outside the country. And fourthly, it's the volunteers, the medical and search and rescue teams who've done an admirable job inside the country and outside the country. In wars, tsunamis, earthquakes, floods, tornadoes, hurricanes, they've done an incredible job. So it's a recognition of all those categories, of events, and to show the organization is strong. And, it's getting so much of public support and so much of prayer and people thanking us for whatever we do. We're not looking for thanks, but we know people appreciate what's being done for them.
And talking about, unfortunate events that has happened over the years, I mean, not even going back that far, a couple of months ago, the floods happened in KZN. And again, one thing that I still don't understand to this day in my 20-year, journalism career is that everyone gets warned way in time, about some serious weather events that can be expected. Like now, we are still going through an extended, La Nina weather system, which brings about a lot of rain with it. Now, going back to the KZN floods, talk to us about you guys receiving, those frantic phone calls from people down there. It's flooding.
The good thing is, in inverted commas, is the moment something happens, everybody starts calling us. The strange thing is that night when it happened on the 11th of April, the calls we got were more from corporates saying, what can we do to help? And I asked them, are you guys feeling well? So they said, why? I said, since when did a corporate call me at 1 o'clock in the morning to give me money and not to make money? Wow. Which, as an aside, shows the compassion of our people. It augurs very well for our country. You know, it's good karma. It shows their spirituality. It shows people care for their own populations. Yes, calls came from everywhere. It was, and we, within 12 hours, we were on site. And because our teams are so diverse and because we have networks all over, we couldn't reach all areas because of the water and the roads, you know. But from, if you take it from parts of Maritzburg where some destruction took place, Camperdown, Hammersdale, Pinetown, Inanda, Kwamashu, Isipingo, Phoenix, Amshloti, Palito, Verulam, Tongat, La Mercy, Amanzintoti, Kwamashu, Amlazi, all those areas, we already knew what was happening in a very short space of time. Central Durban, you know, and all the areas, we started getting feedback from everywhere. Pinetown, Marion Hill, all affected, and Verulam and Amauti. And we responded with speed, you know, in all those different areas. People were affected. And after 48 hours, when we saw people waiting at the streams, which are small streams, it became big rivers.
Yeah.
And we asked them, what are you doing there? And they say they're waiting for the bodies of the deceased, you know, family to be washed so they can catch them and, you know, have a proper burial. It was at that point, within 48 hours, we realized that search and rescue teams are required. We brought in search and rescue teams. We had helicopters on standby. We had people, you know, delivering every area. And then, of course, the water cut off because the water system was damaged. So hospitals and clinics started calling for water. So we had to start distributing water to hospitals and to clinics. As an aside, moving away from, besides supplying soup kitchens and community halls and providing hot meals, blankets, mattresses, hygiene packs, sanitary pads, diapers, we then had to do bottled water. And as we're doing that, then, you know, we said, this is not going to work. So we started drilling boreholes. I think we put in already over 40 boreholes in various parts of KZN. And then schools said they can't go back to work because the schools are totally damaged. So we spent so far over 35 million rand repairing schools so that they could be functional again and kids can go to work.
Wow, interesting time. And when all this happens, Doc, where is government?
Government, unfortunately, you know, have been hamstrung by their own policies, by their systems. And the bottom line right now is every department tells you we have no money. There's just a common, in any department, they tell you straight, we don't have any money. We need outside help. Please, can you help? And when you make money available, there's so many processes involved with that. People want to know it's going to be stolen and, you know, where it's going to go to. There's lobby groups, there's political parties, then the money doesn't move. And the problem is that the ordinary people pay the price for inertia, for lack of a coordinated system, for lack of efficient intervention, because you declare a national disaster. What does disaster mean? Something you do something in 9 months' time or something you do in the next hour? And unfortunately, government doesn't understand three concepts. Urgency, emergency, and disaster is not in government's vocabulary.
Interesting stuff indeed. And as we build up to the ANC's elective conference, the much talked about, you know, conference, I mean, the likes of Kgalema Motlanthe, who's a stalwart in the party, a former president, you know, when this nomination process started initially, they were actually calling and emphasizing that they are actually looking for quality in the new top six leadership, which will be elected in December at that much anticipated conference. Are you confident?
It's very hard, you know, to say what we're going to achieve. And, you know, the kind of, we don't know what candidates are going to come forward. I think they need to bring more youth into the program. The guys are gone too old, to be honest. You know, you need people with fresh ideas. There's a lot of good youth. You know, there are good people in the ANC. You know, even in government, there's a lot of good people. Everybody's not bad. So, and but it's not something new that, you know, that you need to bring your best six now. You need to bring your best people in any situation from 1994 to now.
Yeah.
And you need to have a system where you, you know, I thought they had a system previously where they groom the younger guys to come through and train them. And you need to give them skills, skills in diplomacy, skills in dealing with human relations. But if things start going wrong from the top, where corruption takes place, there's tape capture, what kind of example does that leave for people below? And people say, okay, if the guys at the top can do it, we can do the same thing. Again, when there's lack of spirituality, when materialism comes in, you know, when there's greed and people want to take a bigger piece of the pie.
Yeah.
But in the process, everybody forgets, what about the people? The people who put you there, why did they put you there too?
Yeah.
They're there to get a piece of the pie, or to come help them with health, with water, with education, with put toilets to fix that up, to create jobs, you know, to save money, to look after money, to improve infrastructure, to improve the roads, to improve markets.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Why are you in government? If you don't want to do that, please do yourself and the country a favor, go do something else.
Mm-hmm. And Doc, how's your relationship been as Gift of the Givers, you know, with government, with the different government departments? And I'm asking you this, that yes, as much as Gift of the Givers, you know, has been, you know, getting a lot of praises from all over, but there's always been a selected few, you know, in who are leading those government departments who will say, but no, Gift of the Givers seems to be, you know, now taking over, you know, doing what we are supposed to do. But then again, when somebody says that, I always ask the question, but where are you? Why are you not quick enough to respond to an emergency?
We have a very good relationship with the government.
Yeah.
I'm quite blunt about what I have to say about them. It's not a personal attack.
Sure.
It's about doing your job properly. Mm. Because if you don't do your job properly, people suffer. And it could have been my child, your child, and their child. So it's unforgivable.
Mm-hmm.
If you couldn't do the job, don't stand for election. It's clear as that. If you're there to serve the people, do it properly.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are suffering because of your inefficiency.
Mm-hmm.
We have, and I always say this, we fight in the day and we're friends at night.
Mm-hmm.
And the strange part is, for everything that we do, we are called by government.
Mm-hmm.
They actually call us and say, we need your help. Please, can you come? I mean, let's take a classical example.
Yeah.
The municipality of Kabeja called us.
Mm.
We got a water problem. We're reaching day zero. Please, can you come? We walked in. They told us, do what you want. No obstacles.
Mm.
Everywhere, disasters. Every disaster, we get called by disaster management, the local councillor, the mayor, the provincial department, Kohta. So many called human settlements, water and sanitation, social development, and national disaster.
Mm.
Some government department is calling us.
Mm.
We have a relationship with the SAPS. Mm. We have a relationship with other government departments.
Sure.
But we did big projects with the premier in Free State 2 days ago.
Mm.
You know, they want to meet in a week's time, the entire cabinet.
Mm.
You know, so we have, as I said, there's a lot of good people in government.
Sure.
And those good people want to do the right things. So Gift of the Givers has a policy, hold the hands of the people, the good people who want to do the right things, and let's do the right things together. Because to be fair to government, they can't do this alone.
Sure.
And again, to be fair to them, only 7 million people are paying taxes.
Mm.
And 7 million people's taxes can't look after 65 billion rand.
Absolutely.
So, yes, they need support. Collectively, as a country, we need to support them. But on their side, they need to be ethical.
Mm.
No state capture. They need to strengthen the institutions of the Hawks, the SIU, the NPA, you know, all those things, investigative directors, all those things have to be strengthened.
Mm.
The Reserve Bank, SARS, all those things that look after democracy, parliament, all those things have to be strengthened in the interest that everything else works properly.
Mm-hmm. Now, back to, again, the extreme weather conditions that we've been experiencing, Doc. As we speak, we are still going through the La Nina weather system phase, which brings, you know, a lot of rain with it. And in fact, the South African Weather Service continues to warn of, you know, above normal rainfall to remain in place, at least for the remainder of the coming summer season. What's your take on our disaster management? Are we ever ready, you know, to deal with such you know, bad weather experiences?
Yes and no. We have the personnel.
Mm.
Our personnel are very good. Even when it comes to fires, when it's bad winds, when it comes to diving, when it comes to boats, the personnel we have are very good.
Mm.
You know, within the civil service, they're very well trained. The problem is they are not given the resources.
Oh.
That's where the challenge arises. The fire brigade is not working.
Oh.
The hydrant doesn't throw out water. They don't have the right equipment. The boat is not working. You know, they have one helicopter in a disaster.
Mm.
The communication systems are not working. They don't have two-way radios.
Mm.
They don't have tons of stores of blankets, mattresses, and food items, energy items to give to the people. They can't. It's not their fault.
Mm.
They don't have the resources to back up what they're supposed to do.
Mm.
Like telling a policeman now, you've got to fight crime, but you know what? We don't have a car.
Sure.
We don't have a gun for you, but you must fight crime.
Mm.
I mean, how is that possible?
Mm.
So the capacity is there in terms of personnel.
Yeah.
The willingness is there. The skills is there. But the backup in terms of resources is a huge problem.
Absolutely.
And the other major problem with disaster management in this country is there's no clear line system of who's in charge.
Oh.
And it's too fragmented. Is it human settlements? Is it Kohta? Is it national disaster mention? Is it provincial? In all these different departments. Sure. Is it a municipality? You know, who is it? Is it K-9? Mm. Is it Defense Force when it's bigger stuff? There's no uniform command. Mm. One guy presses the button and everybody responds. Mm. Like in the KZN and floods. Why was there not a system earlier to call guys from other provinces sure. To come and help?
Yeah.
They did it eventually. Right? Of course, it wasn't too late when they did it, but it was done. The other big problem that was seen in the disaster, they didn't have enough search dogs, search and rescue dogs. And why was this thing allowed to proliferate, you know, to grow over the years when you know you don't have the dog and all the dogs are old? I went to see the kennels. The dogs are all too old.
Yeah.
And I offered the police services 60 dogs, that we will buy 60 dogs for them as a start to train them for search and rescue and for crime fighting. Because dogs can't be corrupted. You know, they can do their job properly. And in principle, the police services have agreed. So we need to understand that they want to do their job. You know, and there's good guys in the police force. Everybody in the police force wants a bad guy. But they need the resources and the support. And this is where corporates and South Africans need to help strengthen every division of government. I repeat, 7 million people in Texas can't look after 65 million people. So there will never be enough money to pay for everything else. And when a disaster comes, it puts us backward because it causes damage which was not accounted or not budgeted for.
Yeah.
And you don't have that extra money now. You have more people have lost jobs, so government has to give a bigger social program. People are going to starve. So, of course, they're going to take the money from somewhere. So to be fair to them, they do have the challenges also, but they need to up the game in terms of the way they manage their systems and to make sure money is used wisely.
And, I mean, Doc, the reason also why I mentioned the weather warnings that we, you know, keep on getting, one, KZN again, you know, with the floods. It's not the first time that, you know, those floods have been happening. They've been happening for quite some time. And the South African Weather Service, as I said earlier on, they've always been there like months in advance, or they will even give you a seasonal forecast, you know, to say in the coming spring or summer season, you can expect above normal rainfall. But it appears to me as if there's someone somewhere sitting there who's not taking those warnings serious.
No, no, that's not the problem. The problem is this, that early warning systems don't work. Not only in South Africa, all over the world where there's poor people. Poor people will not move out of their homes. You can tell them a cyclone is coming, an earthquake is coming, son, the whole meteorite is going to hit your land. They're not going to move out of those houses because for them, that's their life's earning, their life's possession. One blanket, one chair, one whatever, you know, two-plate stove. That's their life's possession. They're not going to move out. They're going to say somebody's going to steal it. So take a fire. People refuse to move away from the site of the fire. They sit there where the heat is, where the smoke is, and they wait to go back immediately to go find their spot again. Immediately. They don't want to go to a hall that's 5 kilometers away. They're not going to move. You know, they're going to, or some will move and somebody will stay from the same family on site to make sure they're on site. So that's not going to work. What we need to do is to tell people you can't build on low-lying areas where the rain is going to come. But for that to happen, you got to provide the alternative. Can you give them high-lying land which is suitable to them, which is not far from the taxi route, which is not far from their work? So we need a collective buy-in from those people who will build their houses in those plains and from the municipality or the local council or whoever's in charge. You know, I don't even know which department takes care of that. Human settlements or who, to provide the alternative land and say, look, here's it. Then when you're doing that, you tell them, look, you can build here, but you can't build on top of each other.
Sure.
We need a spacing of 1.5 meters in both in all directions between all of you. So if one house gets damaged in terms of fire, none of the houses get burned. And you need to have a system of ward committees or camp committee or informal settlement committee to say, right, 100 houses are full, nobody else can come inside.
Yeah.
And I saw that work in a place called St. Alban, near the St. Alban School in Klabecha.
Wow.
Where the community leaders, there was no fence between the school and the informal settlement. So I told the school, but isn't this risky? And the community leaders came forward and they told me, this is our school. We protect it. We look after it. There's no gangsterism allowed in our camps. There's no criminal element allowed in our camps. Everybody supports each other. And one guy was painting the school and I asked him, where are you from? He said, I'm from the informal settlement. It is my contribution to paint the school. So I said, how much do you get paid? He said, I'm not taking money. So I said, do you have a job? He says, no, I don't have a job. I'm doing this as my contribution to my school where my children go. So if anybody wants to come into that camp, you have to go to the committee and say if there's space for you to build. Now, that's not a difficult process. If we do that throughout South Africa, we can have decent living, no fire, no crime, no fighting, and, you know, a better quality of life. And that's not impossible to do. They've proven it. They've done it.
It just requires strong will, right, yes, from everyone.
Yes, and we don't need government to do that. Mm. Within ourselves, as human beings, we can talk. Mm. We know how to negotiate. We can speak with each other. Mm. You know, we can do it in a very diplomatic way. Yeah. Say, okay, let's choose our own people, and let's put something that everybody will respect.
Yeah.
And it will just be for the interest of the informal settlements, for those people, and for their children.
You actually remind me of something that I had a conversation with somebody the other day, you know, around the issue of, you know, littering. You know, you're driving, someone who's driving in front of you just decides, you know, they're going to throw out, you know, that paper from a pie that they were eating or a cool drink bottle. And I'm like, people, I don't know if people don't realize that those are the things that also contribute, you know, to
stormwater drains.
Yes, yeah. Getting blocked. Now it's raining. It's a mess.
That you can't blame government for. Mm. That you blame the citizens of South Africa.
Yeah.
That's irresponsible. That's lazy. That's selfish.
Mm.
If we take the dirt away, what about the poor guy from city council, the ordinary worker, now has to go down the drain?
Yes.
And you are putting a burden on an ordinary man. He's a man, he's a husband, he's a father, but he's a human being. He deserves dignity. You can make his life easy.
Mm.
In fact, let's make a call to all South Africans, all 65 million of us.
Mm.
Let's start cleaning up our schools, our streets, our communities. What's so difficult? It's not menial.
Mm.
It's in the interest of our environment. No bugs, no insects, no rats. Let's do it together and make joy and fun out of it, you know. And let's do it. A lot of people do it, but a lot of schools we go to, we see they're completely littered. Where's the management? Where's the school principal?
Yeah.
Where's the teachers? Where's the governing body? We can't be so lax.
Mm.
You want the country to fix. You say the government is lax. You're no different.
Yeah.
Put some gumption and let's do something for our own interests because we live in the area, nobody else.
Yeah.
So let's fix it.
Absolutely. Now, 30 years, you know, in the game, what can we expect over the next coming 30 years? Because I'm sure you will still be around as an organization, you know, over the next 30 years. Because there's still a lot of work to be done, though.
Because it's spiritual, we don't plan.
Mm.
The teacher said, you will know. And as things unfold in front of us, we respond to what unfolds. Nobody knew of COVID 30 years ago. It came and we responded to it.
Mm.
Then, of course, hospitals needed upgrade. We responded to that. Now, as a result of COVID, there's a need for backup surgery.
Mm.
So we get involved in that. But broad categories, what we like to focus on is infrastructure.
Mm.
Government facilities and schools, upgrading existing facilities, putting toilets. We're already doing that, but, you know, on a much wider scale.
Sure.
Putting more classrooms, that's one. So infrastructure at one level. Secondly, more boreholes to bring ease to people. We are delivering water for the last 3 years with tankers in parts of Eastern Cape, Monday to Sunday, 365 days a year, and the people's situation hasn't improved one bit.
Mm.
Where we put the balls is improved, but it's expensive to put balls everywhere.
Yeah.
But we need to carry on with that process. So that's number two. Number three, we need, within the education system, we need teachers. We lost over 2,000 teachers in COVID. They're not being replaced. And other ones are getting old. And, you know, they're getting too tired to teach. So we need to fund kids to become teachers, but we need to fund the salary of those kids when they become teachers, while the government doesn't have any money.
Mm.
And I say openly, let's give government 4 years.
Yeah.
You got 4 years to get your act together. Let private sector start helping where we can, pay for teachers, you know, and pay for teachers with special education needs. There's a lot of kids with learning disorders.
Mm.
You know what? And the teachers say you're stupid. The child is not stupid. The child got a learning disorder. And we need to address the situation, you know, and give the child an opportunity. Then there's kids with audiology programs. We're already running audiology programs in schools. And next year, we're introducing optometry, where we can pick up glasses. We went to Toast Rafir, and we saw hundreds of people got eye issues.
Mm.
And we're starting to fix that up. We're sending medical teams to different hospitals to support the existing doctors because they're short of anesthetists or a scrub sister. They can't do the operations. They got everything but a shortage of personnel. We were in Kimberley recently in Robert Mangaliso Sobukwe Hospital.
Mm.
We did 71 operations in 60 hours.
Wow.
And all those people got a whole new lease of life. So it could be a small intervention with a big difference. The project I'm really interested in right now is to fund 500 registrars.
Mm.
Registrars are medical doctors who carry on to become specialists. But the government has cut the registrar posts, which means we're going to have far less doctors specializing. Which means there's going to be very little academic medicine, which means there's going to be poor patient care, which means there's going to be more sick people, which means there's going to be more people dying, which means there's going to be more people burnt out. And at the same time, while we won't have specialists coming out, lower down, the junior interns, the medical officers will not get trained because they're dependent on registrars to train them. And when you don't move, pressure starts going up, the posts are frozen, which means junior interns can't move forward, interns can't move forward, medical officers can't move forward, because the posts are now held by those people who are supposed to be in the registrar system. Mm. So I'm telling Corporate South Africa again, give me 1.2 million rand per registrar. It's a government responsibility, sure. But you know the story, there's no money. And who suffers? Not the government, the public. Mm-hmm. So let's give 1.2 million rand, but I need a compartment for 4 years. Because it takes 4 years for a registrar to become a specialist. Mm. When we do that, when you put in extra registrars, we decrease the time of calls. So the registrar doesn't work 3 to 4 nights a week, he only works 2 nights a week, or she. The next 5 nights to study, and also to teach the junior doctors to pass skills. Once a month, you go to a non-academic hospital, because registrars only train in the academic hospital.
Yeah.
An academic hospital is a hospital attached to a medical school anywhere in the country. So they go to non-academic hospitals, they pass the skills on to the junior doctors, and they see the patients in those hospitals. Mm. We improve the quality of healthcare substantially, and all it needs is 1.2 million rand from one company over 4 years, which is not a lot of money.
Mm.
But the impact of what it will do for the health services of our country is incalculable. Mm-hmm. And what it will do to the quality of life of people, they won't be staying in hospitals for 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, taking up bed space, taking up medication, taking up care, which we don't have. You know, we're short of all that.
Yeah.
We need to improve the speed of getting things done.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Now, I read something where you were quoted about, you know, South Africa turning things around, improving things, you know, to require about 4 years or so, you know, for that to become possible. Talk to us more about that, and why do you believe that it is even possible, you know, when one looks at our current challenges in the country, Doc?
The challenges we have are no different from what challenges people have in other parts of the world. But we have good people in government.
Mm.
We have good policies. We have good civil servants. We have a very good corporate entity.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, you can see the corporates have changed a lot from the time of COVID.
Mm.
South African people are Ubuntu-driven. Sure. 83% of the country of high-net-worth individuals are generous in giving charity. A report was released yesterday. You know, and you find South Africans care for each other. We see it in the floods, how they stood with each other.
Mm.
The civil unrest, they stood with each other.
Mm.
The World Cup came, we stood with each other. So we are there for each other.
Mm.
The problem is we shouldn't allow politicians and groups to separate us on the basis of racism, you know, class and religion. And people who do that, who cause friction and discord for a personal agenda, I call those people traitors and anti-patriots. Anybody who steals money from the government, which is supposed to go to the poor people, you're a traitor. Because you've harmed the lives of millions of people in our country. And we need to get those people out. And that's why we need to strengthen the SIU, the Hawks, and people like that to make sure we set an example, because you're affecting the lives of ordinary children who are starving from malnutrition in the Eastern Cape, who are dying because of malnutrition in the Eastern Cape. We are a country that got gold, diamonds, and platinum, but we're dying from hunger. It makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so to answer your question, we have a very good civil society. We have keen people.
Yeah.
And the last few months, I've got people, South Africans, who say we want to come back to our country.
Mm.
And I, the message I've been giving is the country does not belong to the government.
Yeah.
The country belongs to me, to you, and 65 million people. We take ownership. That's why we clean the dirt.
Mm.
That's why we don't block the stormwater drains.
Mm.
Let's take all the retired people, police, detectives, engineers, doctors, nurses, you know, municipal workers, everybody who's got that skill, bring your skill back. Let's share your experience with us and let us upgrade the skills of our people. And one more call to corporate South Africa. Let's take in the youth as apprentices.
Yeah.
Let's put them in different departments doing apprentice, giving them skills, giving them a stipend, some amount of money, which they can look after their family.
Mm.
But more than that, they will get dignity. They'll get self-esteem. They'll get empowerment. They'll move negative energy into positive energy. They feel they can contribute to the good of society. We can change the mindset.
Mm.
All it requires is corporates, franchise stores, ordinary people in South Africa. Let's all of us take one person as an apprentice, a youth, and give them an opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Now, lastly, Doc, load shedding is our biggest headache currently in the country. You know, we've got a serious electricity, energy crisis. Are you playing any role, you know, or contributing in any way as Gift of the Givers, you know, in an attempt to sort of, you know, address this problem that we have, this power, electricity problem that we have in the country?
That's a major government responsibility. Mm. It's too expensive. But as South Africans, we can play a role.
Mm.
Because when there's load shedding, we can't, our plugs and all are not working.
Sure.
Why don't we do that, preempt it? You know, let's all look at our homes. I mean, it's expensive business.
Sure.
But look at our homes and say, okay, What plugs can I disconnect on a daily basis?
Mm.
What appliances or what can I put off? Because, you know, it's the plug is live.
Sure. Even
when the plug is in, it takes some type of current.
Mm.
So if all of us start looking at where we can save in terms of, you know, getting off the circuit,
mm.
collectively with so many millions of people, we will take the pressure off the grid.
Sure.
So many megawatts if all of us do that. Secondly, those people who have the means, put inverters in your house, solar panels, and where we can, let's use wind energy.
Mm.
Thirdly, government should not stop any entity that wants to now go private in terms of solar energy or wind energy. Let them do it, because the advantage of that, if everybody, whoever starts doing that, puts less pressure on the grid.
Sure.
So every kilowatt that we take off the grid means the chances of load shedding decreases,
mm.
or the stage of load shedding decreases. We won't be number 5 and number 6. We may be number 2 and number 1, which mm. we can live with.
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
Until we fix up the nuclear reactor, we fix up the different power stations, we bring the renewable energies in, let people go and do that as alternatives. Wind, solar. The other thing we can do is get corporate buy-in and say, okay, let's target select schools in the country,
sure.
and let's target the academic hospitals first. Let's take them off the grid,
mm.
you know, and let's target those and take them off the grid,
mm.
you know, and we can use cheaper forms of light,
sure.
lights that are power saving lights, use solar geysers, and individual people can do that in their homes. So whatever we can do to get off the electricity system, we then helping ESCOM, because ESCOM is ours. It's not
yeah.
the government's.
Yeah.
It's our ESCOM. So let's see how we can help our own ESCOM to fix things. Yes, they need to fix up the theft. They need to bring, if I was in charge, I'll bring the defense force in. To say, let's put military around. This is
yeah.
the economy is driven by ESCOM. Put
yeah.
the military in, find the people, catch them out,
yeah.
and make sure it's run with military precision.
Yeah.
That no nonsense can take place there.
Absolutely.
Guys are ripping the system off. Catch them, you know, attach all the assets,
sure.
get all the money back. But let's be vigilant.
Mm.
It requires more than just CEOs and engineers. It requires a full support from a defense system
mm.
to make sure, because this is a security endpoint. ESCOM shuts off, the whole country shuts down.
Yeah. And I mean, you're talking about that. In fact, an hour or so before we started with this interview, I'm sure you've heard that story. Another incident at the very same power station, Camden, person caught as an employee fiddling with the coal, you know? But anyway, we can sit here and, you know, talk about this the whole day. But thank you so much once again, Doc.
Just one important point
yeah.
again. Instead of us, again, to emphasize, instead of us waiting for government to do something,
yeah.
let's do it. Let's teach our kids.
Mm.
Let's use, even kids are to kids. Let's teach our fellow friends
mm.
maths, teach them science, teach them sports.
Sure.
Let's do it ourselves. Let's be active citizens.
Mm.
This is our country. We save it ourselves.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Doc, for coming through. And once again, you know, I've been trying to get a hold of you. It's been months. Because of the way you've been so busy, you know, almost every day, but at least finally you managed to come today, and that really, really means a lot. And again, once again, thank you for the good that you've been doing, you know, as an organization, as individuals, you know, of the givers. And, don't tire, continue doing what you do best and which is good for the country. I thank you so much, Doc.
Thanks, Stephen. And I know, again, greetings to the listeners. Let's be patriotic South Africans.
Absolutely. Folks, that's how we came to the end of that interview with Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman from Gift of the Givers. And this has been the show for this week. Until we meet again next week, between now and then, you take good care of yourselves. Cheers.